You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, August the 20th. The primary election for mayor of Tucson, 1 week away from tomorrow. Well, from today. Good grief. From today. So you got to mail in your ballot by tomorrow. Talking about this election is Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party and one of the best defense lawyers in America. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, John.
Well, has Raheena Romero bought this race? Is it over? She bought and paid for it. Now it's hers.
Well, I don't know. You know, I always thought that before this money emerged, and it emerged kind of late, actually. It really didn't happen until really quite a few of the ballots were already turned in. So we're going to find out next Tuesday, but it's, you know, the race is probably already over. The bulk of the ballots are in the hands of the city elections right now, and there will be a few more mailed in tomorrow, and then there will be some people who insist on dropping it off at the polls or couldn't make up their minds. I guess we have some voting stations, five or six places you can drop them off. So that's, you know, we're going to know in 7 days whether or not somebody bought the election, both here and for the mayor and for the Ward 1 race. There's a lot of money that flowed into Grijalva and Raheena's hand-picked selection to take her place. A lot of money flowed into that race as well. I'm confident that Sammy Hamed's ground game will push him over the finish line. But, you know, we'll see.
You know, the one thing that I was commenting this morning to a colleague of mine was the idea that if she can buy this race and she gets the nomination, wins it because there's so many more Democrats than there are anybody else in the general election, she can intimidate other races from now on. She can go to people and say, look what I did in my race. I can throw a lot of outside money your way. If I can support you and you can support me, she can build a machine out of this. She really can. I mean, this is the beginning of and not the end of how you build a political machine.
Well, don't kid yourself for a moment. This is not just Raheena Romero. I mean, this is Raul Grijalva. That's exactly what's going on there. I mean, I've got friends in the UFCW, and by the way, if you watch MSNBC some evenings, you'll see blanketed ads for Raheena Romero that are paid for by UFCW.
Wow.
And friends in that union tell me that they personally had the thumb put on the scale by the Grijalva campaign, saying you will endorse her and run ads for her. And those ads, they're really the most atrocious ads I've seen. They brag. Here you have an independent group running an ad on television bragging about her being a clean election candidate. Now, how ironic is that? I mean, for God's sakes, you know, I that's just embarrassing to listen to an outside group, you know, who's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I do believe we'll see $1 million spent here. And this sets just an extraordinarily bad example for Tucson. We're just going to have to double down on Terry Goddard's dark money initiative that he's doing now. He had the signatures to pull that thing across the finish line, but you know, the legislature has tightened up the requirements for the signatures so much that if you use paid circulators, they have to be able to testify at a court hearing challenging the signatures. And so this time he's going to do it with all volunteers, and he's got a lot longer to do it. And that's where we're going to have to count on this is through the initiative process. And you can bet the Republicans are going to fight this as hard as they can because they believe that people should be able to donate anonymously and not have their feet held to the fire when they make a political donation. And this initiative would do exactly that. You couldn't just donate your money through one group and then that group sends it to this group, what is it called, CHSPA, Arizona. You know, you have to identify the actual donors who donated it. You can't create this Russian doll scheme where an individual donor donates to one organization who donates to another organization who donates to another one who then finally donates it to the last organization who then supports the candidate or attacks another candidate. All of that will fall by the wayside in Arizona if Terry Goddard gets his way and we pass this dark money initiative.
You know, I was talking with Alison Jones, the chair of the Democratic Party. She's shocked by what has happened, and she's disturbed by it. They don't support it. I'm talking about the high-ranking members of the Democratic Party that exist today. A great many other people are just appalled as well. If she does not win this, if Rahina does not win this, she's finished in politics because of the kind of campaign she ran. If she wins, she's got a future of building a machine that could dominate City Hall for many years to come. Not just the two that are affected by the Ward 1 council seat and her mayor's seat, which is 2 out of 4 of the votes you need to do anything. You're halfway there. But she'll rule for a long time. And Raul Grijalva will be the man behind the curtain. And we'll be running politics for Tucson for a long time to come, I think. There's a lot at stake in this race, Jeff.
There really is. And it's, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, are we going to allow somebody to buy and pay for the mayor's office? And, Republicans typically have a heck of a lot more money to contribute and spend in these kinds of races. But we've never seen anybody do something like this. It's phenomenal. And you know what might happen with this is Republicans have been pushing for nonpartisan elections in Tucson for years. We're the last city in Arizona that has partisan elections. This might increase the push for that. It might pull some moderate Democrats into the Republic to join with the Republicans and call for nonpartisan elections if this happens. I mean, there are all untold consequences that could happen if they're able to purchase this election.
By the way, if she wins the nomination, do you think moderate Democrats will switch to Ed Ackerley, perhaps, the independent running?
I think there are probably quite a few Democrats who will switch to Ackerley. You know, he's not a kind of wild-eyed, crazy Republican. He's what we used to call a sort of a normal moderate Republican. And I guess he's running as an independent because he thinks that he has a better chance there. And to tell you the truth, you know, he probably would not have a prayer of beating Farley and probably not Dorman, but he could run a lot better race against someone like Romero.
As you take a look at this thing and look at the number of votes in, how much of the vote that was expected is in? I'm not talking about the total vote. I don't know what that total vote is. But how much of what was expected out of this race is just already in the bank?
I think probably 90% of what we expected is in, yeah. I think if we had the votes counted right now, we would probably know the result of the race.
Do you think that the pushback against Rahina is going to be significant enough to make her somewhat of a pariah in the Democratic Party because she did this, or is this just normal course of politics nowadays?
And it's just politics as it's being played right now. I there are going to be people who are going to push back and say, we can't believe you, really. And technically, I suspect they're trying to be very careful and have no cooperation with these independent committees. But when one of them is run by your chief of staff for 7.5 years, yeah. I mean, you can't hardly think they're not on the same page. So I think a lot of people will be offended by that. And there will be a bit of a backlash because of that.
Well, it seems to me that because we've not seen this before, I think this was orchestrated from the very beginning. This thing didn't just start just last week or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. I think this was the whole plan all along, wasn't it, to get this last-minute money into the race?
I'm sure it was, but you know what? In the old days when 90% of us voted at the polls and we called the other people absentee ballots, in that day and age, these last-minute attacks that would go unanswered because the other people didn't have the money to answer them could really change a race, overnight. But so many people vote by mail, and so many people like me and a lot of other Democrats get that ballot in during the first week. And so the fact that some of this came so late in the game may be the only thing that saves Farley.
By the way, you talk to a lot of Democrats. You're the former chair of the Democratic Party. What do your Democratic friends say about this?
They agree with me that this is just obscene, the amount of money that's been brought to bear here, that this is going to change Tucson for the worse. And it sets a horrible example for our future. I mean, I thought it was rather astonishing when we first ran Jonathan for mayor 8 years ago, And he said, well, you know, I'm not going to use city taxpayer money. And he raised over $300,000. And at that time, that was an astonishing amount of money for the candidate to raise. There was no outside spending on the race. It was, you know, basically, you know, the him against the Republican. Well, it was Rick Grinnell. And, you know, that race turned out, we won, and he served two terms. But the fact is that we didn't see any kind of outside money, and that was the most that had ever been raised. Now we have a campaign where, you know, practically all three of them are going to have that kind of money, although Romero was getting half of her money from the city. But then you add in the, you know, $500,000, $750,000, or $1 million that's going to be spent on her behalf by these outside groups. And, you know, it's astonishing. It's just, it really is obscene.
You know, I was talking with Pamela Powers Hanley, the state representative, the progressive from Legislative District 9. She says she's appalled by it, sickened by it. She was back east. We were going to have her on the show, but she's kind of in the middle of a bunch of family matters. And she said, I'd love to get on your show maybe at the end of the week, but I want people to realize how badly I feel about what's happening here. I think a great many of legislators, I think people on the Board of Supervisors, I think a whole lot of people are just really upset over this, but I don't think they saw it coming, at least to this degree. They just didn't see it coming. I didn't.
No, I certainly didn't see it coming. I certainly thought there would be some outside groups, you know, unions and others, that, like, for instance, Steve has a modest investment of the firefighters and police officers on his behalf. We see the yellow firefighter signs around town, but that's nothing. We're talking $20,000-$30,000. We're not talking $500,000, $750,000, or $1 million. But I mean, it wasn't so long ago that was enough money to run an entire congressional campaign, and I'm talking not very long ago.
Well, and it seems to me too that the last two print pieces that I've received are all hit pieces on Farley distorting his voting record in the legislature, suggesting that he did not support the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion for Arizona, suggesting he did not support teacher salary increases, suggested that he was opposed to helping children. I mean, it's just a sickening distortion of Steve Farley's voting record, which has always been a progressive record throughout his 12 years in the legislature. And, of course, it reminds me, if you can bear to hear the truth, you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, as Kipling would tell us. That's apparently what's happening in these two pieces that I've seen just in the last week or so. There may be more coming this week. I don't know.
Well, it's getting pretty late to be doing that now. I think most of the campaigns like Farley's, who are doing sensible things right now, are focusing on you know, getting ballots returned and just calling people whose ballots have not. You get a download from the city clerk's office every day, and you take people out of your database, and you start calling people saying your ballot hasn't been returned. This is the last day you can mail it tomorrow. And then on Thursday, the message that'll go to people is your ballot, if you still have your ballot, it's too late to mail it. You need to, you know, call this number or go to this website and check where you can drop your ballot off. There's six places to do it. And that message will resonate throughout the weekend. So that's the, you know, you're not going to probably see any more mail or any more negative advertising, because right now it's about what we call the ballot chase, getting people's ballots out of their hands and into the mailbox tomorrow and hand delivering them on election day next Tuesday.
We're talking with Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party and one of the best defense lawyers in the country. Did the court ruling concerning sanctuary city status for the city of Tucson, as it more than likely will be placed on the ballot now for the general election, surprise you?
It didn't, because it followed the current case law where charter cities have a strong ability to set up their own election processes. Now, I don't know if they're going to appeal that decision, but this Supreme Court, the Arizona Supreme Court, who's now all but one member appointed by Ducey, they're a little less, maybe a little more skeptical of these charter city arguments, that the charter cities could do just about anything they want in violation of state law. So I'm not sure whether they appealed it or not, but I probably would have if I'd been the people who, the lawyers who had taken the case, because this might be ripe for a reexamination. But the current case law gives a great deal of authority to charter cities to make these kinds of decisions about how they run their elections.
Jeff Rogers, thanks so much for being with us, and we'll see how this unfolds. It is a historic time for Tucson. We have never been in these uncharted waters before. It's going to be amazing to see what happens.
And John, speaking of uncharted waters, President Trump just insulted 71% of the Jewish community in America. He said that Jews are disloyal or not smart if they vote for a Democrat, which 71% voted for Hillary Clinton in the last election. I mean, and that gives us, you know, the insensitive and slur trope that has always been around, that somehow Jews have a higher loyalty to Israel or something else than they do to America. He has insulted every Jewish American in America with this trope this afternoon, and he's getting hammered for it from the right and the left. I mean, everybody is hammering him for this. You know, he's just so insensitive to remarks like this. You know, it's astonishing how stupid he is.
He is so stupid. He is a very stupid man. Thank you, Jeff Rogers. Good to talk with you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call Mike Emery. You can reach him at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott. I recommend Perfection Auto Works for the repair of your car. Mike Emery is an honest mechanic. He's fair. They're professional people at Perfection Auto Works. Each service technician is ASE certified. Customer reviews are by the dozens. You can read them all. I'm so proud to present to you Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works as a sponsor of our show. You can find Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call at 323-8650.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Show. He's our money man. Nobody understands money better than Shelley Fishman. We're so pleased to talk with him today. Hi, Shelley. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, John. Did you call the president stupid in the last segment?
Perhaps I did. Sometimes I think these things. I'm not sure whether I uttered them out loud, but perhaps I did, yes.
Well, you know, he had his stupid minions out all weekend long talking about the fact that there was not going to be a recession.
No, of course not. Well, he's considering a payroll tax cut amid this mounting economic crisis. What's your take on that?
Well, let's talk about the rumors that were reported over the weekend. Apparently, when Mr. Navarro and Kudlow got back to the White House, they were told that they better get together and get a plan together just in case there is a recession or something that appears to be a recession. And so they came up with, according to the reporting at least, they came up with a possibility of three things that they could do to avoid the not recession. The first one was a payroll tax reduction. We'll get back to that because I think that's the one you want the detail on. Capital gains tax reduction, which is just another giveaway to people who worry about capital gains taxes. In other words, people in the top 10%. And he talked about potentially reversing the tariffs, which, of course, Americans aren't paying anyway. The Chinese are paying for the tariffs, so I don't know how reversing the tariffs is going to do anything. But anyway, the entire thing here, John, is to try to reduce the uncertainty in the American economy, because what can happen with a recession is that talk of a recession becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And when people talk about the recession, it's on the way, it's going to come, it's happening, then people stop spending. And 70% of our economy, John, is consumer spending. So if consumers start hoarding money and stop spending, and consumer confidence that the economy will continue to be successful, if that goes down, then it can actually either deepen a recession, make it happen sooner, or make it happen at all. And so, leaders have to be very, very, let's call it delicate, in the way they articulate their concerns. And certainly what was going on over the weekend on the television shows, on the weekly television shows, was off to one side, because Navarro and Cutler were saying no problems with the economy at all, and then on Sunday and Monday it was reported that they were huddling to come up with some plans just in case. Anyway, payroll tax reductions. John, let's just talk about what the payroll taxes are. Payroll taxes are paid by pretty much all W-2 employees. If my memory serves, it's about 6.2% of your salary, and then the employer matches that by another 6.2%, and that gets paid to the federal government. Whether or not you're paying federal income taxes, it's an employment tax, and it goes to pay for Social Security and Medicare. And those two things, which are both financially unstable as it is, if you were to cut, and I heard this number today, I can't swear to it, but it sounds about right. If you were to cut the payroll taxes by 1%, that would cost the American economy, that would put $73 billion a year into the American economy. But, of course, it would deprive those lockboxes, the Social Security and the Medicare lockboxes, of that amount of money. That's a pretty good stimulus, you would think.
Wow.
We tried it in 2008, actually. The Obama administration did cut payroll taxes, but they didn't do it by sending out, $700 checks. They did it by simply reducing the percentage of those taxes on a temporary basis that was withheld from employees' salaries. And quite frankly, the employees never saw it. It was, $20-$30 every other week, whatever, and it proved to be an inefficient way to stimulate the economy, because people just didn't feel flush with the cash. Now, if they do it the way it was done in earlier administrations, by sending large checks to people, then that could certainly have a stimulative effect and promote buying and purchasing on the part of the public.
But how do you stave off a recession if one's coming, no matter what?
Well, that's a great question, John. This recession has been building up now for several years. Part of it is because the world economy has slowed. Part of it is because of the trade policies of this administration. Part of it is just this recovery has now gone on for 10, 11 years, and the average interval between recessions is about 6 years. So now, recoveries don't die of old age. At least that's what we're told. But at the same time, it's a long period of time to continue to expand the economy without getting some pullbacks. Now, recessions don't have to be deep, and they don't have to last a long time. But 11 years without one, would indicate that the economy would be very sensitive to negative pressures that would cause a slowdown. And I think that's kind of what's happened here. This kind of steamroller is moving ahead. The administration hasn't helped it with its policies. And I think what at least 60 or 70% of economists are saying right now is that we will have a recession, if not in 2020, then by 2021.
Well, and of course you add to that the statement from the president today, as Jewish leaders are outraged by Trump saying Jews are disloyal, that they vote for Democrats. So, seriously.
Clearly, so my forecast is that the recession will actually start in the first quarter of 2020, but because we don't get GDP growth numbers until the end of the quarter, and then typically another 30 days, we won't know that we went a little bit negative in the 2020 first quarter until sometime at the end of April of 2020. And then it takes two negative quarters to be officially called a recession. So sometime in July of 2020, we'll get the numbers for the second quarter, which I forecast will be in the area of a negative 1%. That'll be two negative quarters, and sometime in July, at the height of the election, we will have a recession announced.
Wow.
That's my forecast.
Wow.
And that is not going to do this administration any good.
No, it is not. And I'm not sure they can do anything about it. He keeps saying he can turn this tide, but that doesn't seem to be turnable, does it? I mean,
well,
do you?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, if we had all the bullets in the, you know, in the clip available, or all the arrows in the quiver, whatever analogy you want to use, we could employ the Fed to cut interest rates a bunch. They could do some quantitative easing. We could find ways to do stimulus that, for instance, were found in 2008 and 2009. But first of all, with the Congress in the hands of the Democrats, though, you know, I don't want to say that anybody is rooting for a recession, it's going to be very difficult to convince a Democratic House to help this president out very much, unless there are quid pro quos that are very substantial.
Well, let's take for example the whole situation that that the recession's coming and we're going to have to deal with it. But how does that affect me, a middle income person? Tell me how. I understand how it affects the economy overall, but how does that affect me?
Well, it will affect you in several ways. One way is that it is going to normally make interest rates reflect stimulus. Interest rates will go down. So your cost of borrowing money will go down. Everybody's would go down in a case where interest rates are cut in response to an economic slowdown. So that's the, you know, part of the good news. Part of the bad news is that the unemployment rate will go up. Now, you're self-employed, John, so that's not really going to affect you too much. But when the country is in kind of a funk, everybody kind of is affected by it in ways that are not necessarily predictable. I mean, your friends get unemployed. There's just a malaise that seems to kind of infect the entire mood of the country that is there and that you feel. But in addition to that, what normally accompanies a recession is a reduction in stock prices. And when that happens, if you are invested in a 401k or an IRA, or you have other investments, if, you know, middle-class people do very often, then you're going to see a reduction in the value of your portfolio. And that's very important if you're using that portfolio to, you know, help meet, say, your retirement goals. Because you're retired or you're quasi-retired or you're in your 60s or 70s, and using that money when those stocks are in retreat, you can never recover from. So that's something that I, as a financial advisor, caution clients that if you are exposed to risk, and that means you have stocks, equities, and those stocks pull back, then you have to cut back on your spending during the time that, you know, they will recover, but during the time they're down, you have to minimize your use of those investments. Otherwise, they're going to run out on you much earlier than they would have had we not had a recession in the middle of your, you know, retirement years.
Shelley Fishman, how global is a recession in this country?
Well, I'm not sure I follow.
Well, saying if there's a recession in this country, there's a recession worldwide?
Oh, you bet.
In fact,
I think the rest of the world is already leading us there. Germany, most economists believe that Germany is already in a recession, that Italy, if it's not already in one, is on the cusp. Then we have Brexit. You know, one of the ultimate stupidities that can occur, that's going to throw Britain into a recession or very close to one. We know that China has cut back significantly. Now, the Chinese understand this, and they're already taking some steps to avoid it. But their economy is growing about half as quickly as it was growing just a few years ago. So the rest of the world will, in fact, either lead us or follow us. And when these recessions happen, they tend to be contagious. So you'll see the rest of the world kind of suffering as well, which means trade goes down, and at a time when global warming and civil wars and droughts are causing dislocations of large numbers of people, if the most vulnerable countries in the world also get hit with unusual economic duress, then you could see this being a very unsettling time for geopolitical unrest.
What would your guess be for the length of a recession, and how deep would it be, given the next 24 to 48 months?
So I think that's going to depend on your prior question, which is how deep will the recession be in the rest of the world? The economy right now is still fairly strong. Unemployment is fairly low. I would say this would be a recession that might last maybe three or four quarters, and then we'd come out of it. I would expect that the stock market could go down 30 or 35 or 40%, and then we pull right back out of that within 6 months. So I'm not looking for a really deep recession. However, we have people running the world right now who are doing very unpredictable things. And so all things being normal, I would think that this would be a shallow and short recession.
Would you suggest that we have some of the worst possible people in the world advising the President of the United States from the White House concerning these economic difficult times?
I cannot imagine two less qualified people than Navarro and Kudlow.
Everybody knows that, though. I mean, all economists know that. All financial people notice that. Does anybody else in the White House notice that?
Well, they apparently, and you know, I don't have any ears in the White House, so I can't say this for certain, but they're very good at telling the president what he wants to hear. And if that happens to be the wrong information, then, you know, at what point do you tell the emperor that he's not wearing any clothes?
Well, that's difficult to even imagine.
Sure. I mean, this guy doesn't want to hear bad news.
No, apparently not.
It's disheartening, but we do have some people who are running things elsewhere in the government,
like the Fed, apparently.
Yeah. Who can put their feet, in cement and tell them yes and do nothing.
Well, and I'm not sure what role the Congress would play in a recession. What role could they play?
Well, they could refuse to pass bad legislation. They could do that. They could also put some things on the table with veto-proof majorities that could help us out. In other words, if we do need a big stimulus, we could do that. I don't see that coming out of the Senate. Remember, this recession, if it happens, is going to happen under the current Senate and the current House of Representatives. And right now, there's just not a lot of comity between, that's C-O-M-I-T-Y, comity, between those houses or between the parties. So it's hard to see how the Congress could unify in producing the kinds of legislation that might help the economy through dire straits.
Shelly Fishman, so good to talk with you. I always learn from you. Money matters are just so important to all of us, and you make some sense out of them. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
John, before we go, yep. I just, for people who are listening, I really want to encourage anybody who's got investments, got a portfolio, please consult with your financial advisor. Don't panic. Get good advice before you make rash decisions.
Very good idea. Thank you so much. All right, Shelly. Thank you. Shelly Fishman, our financial expert on the John C. Scott Show. He appears regularly with Bill Buckmaster on the Great Bill Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with Tom Przelsky to wrap things up. He's on the executive committee of the Pima County Democratic Party. What about the dark money in the mayoral campaign? We've talked with Tom about that before. We're going to talk with him about it again. That's coming up after these messages.
We're Tucson's trusted voice for local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
I'm Randy Dorman, and I'm running for mayor of Tucson. Since day one of the campaign, I've been focused on sharing my vision and outlining concrete actions we can take to transform Tucson into a thriving 21st century city. My message is simple. Don't settle for the status quo. We can do better. I've been seeing this election devolve into the same politics as usual that holds our city back. The other candidates are going for easy applause lines and bickering back and forth. I know we need to focus on real plans to move Tucson forward. I've received the endorsement of the Arizona Daily Star, who called me a big picture thinker who has grounded details to bring her vision to life. I would be honored to have your vote. Please mail back your ballot with a vote for Randy Dorman before August 21st.
This message paid for by Randy Dorman for mayor.
Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, host of the Creative City Show. Join us on Wednesday as we talk with Tony Ford. This guy's been around the innovation and entrepreneurship environment in Tucson since before it was a thing. He has a lot of context, a lot of history, a lot of thoughts, and can speak to some of the tech and innovation happening in Tucson right now. You don't want to miss it. Tune in, 10:30 The Voice at 10. See you there.
When you see a bicyclist, remember, cyclists are friends, neighbors, and family members. From the Tucson Police Department, here is Chief Chris Magnus with a life-saving message for all motorists.
Every year in and around Tucson, bicyclists are hit, injured, or killed. Arizona law requires that you must give at least 3 feet of clearance when you pass a cyclist. Safety is everyone's responsibility. A moment's distraction can be a lifetime of regret. Give cyclists at least 3 feet when passing. It's the law. Brought to you by Look, Save a Life.
Hi, this is Dr. Hope with Higher Ground. We're going to be covering topics in regards of mental health, bullying, criminal justice reform. We have to talk about these issues because 1 out of 5 Americans are suffering from mental health issues. 1 out of 4 students have been bullied. And we know that we are incarcerating too many Americans in our country. And to address these issues, we have to first be able to have conversations. So tune in every Saturday from 10 to 11 to Higher Ground, 10:30, The Voice.
This is The Voice, 10:30, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. Tom Przelski is with us. He's on the executive committee of the Pima County Democratic Party.
Tom, welcome to the show. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, John.
We've been talking about this historic amount of money, the independent race, our independent campaign waged on behalf of Raheena Romero, the Ward 1 councilwoman. Is that going to change things in this race?
I think it could. It's, you know, because I mean these outside groups that are spending money in Raheena's race are not the sort of dark money groups we talk about in other places. These are labor unions. These are community groups. Folks who have an actual constituency in Tucson, and so they're not only bringing in kind of financial resources into the race, but they're bringing in people, and that's what really counts. And if when you're talking about the UFCW, you're talking about thousands of people in Tucson.
And communication workers, is that
yeah,
you're
the communicate. Well, the UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers, those are grocery store folks,
right.
Other yeah. retail sort of folks, you know. So it, you know, when people make attacks on her for using, well, she's not really using the money because she can't coordinate, but for benefiting from that outside money, they forget that outside money also represents thousands of people. It's not like, let's say, you know, Doug Ducey bringing in money from
the Koch brothers,
some millionaire in another state who doesn't really have a constituency. These are groups that actually represent real Tucsonans.
You know, you have a situation too where they've been pretty hard hitting against Farley. They've distorted his voting record on a couple of issues. They really have, suggesting he didn't support the Medicaid expansion, and he did. Indicating that he didn't support teacher salary increases, and he did support that. I just thought those were a distortion of his record, period. That's what happens with dark money campaigns.
Yeah, and that's a problem. And also, I mean, the record on like teacher salaries is a little muddy because he had a different approach to addressing the issue of teacher salaries than the Red for Ed people did. And the Red for Ed movement was happening in the midst of the primary race for governor. And Steve was, not seen as being friendly to the Red for Ed movement because they wanted the teacher salaries increased with a ballot measure and that sort of thing. Steve preferred approaching it from a standpoint of eliminating sales tax exemptions. But he'd been working on that issue since the day he got in the legislature. He picked up the ball from Dave Bradley. And he hadn't been able to do that, so I think the teachers in that case had a better case, and I know there's some resentment within the teaching community about Steve taking up that issue, but this may be some of the kind of the lingering resentment from that.
Do you think there's going to be a resentment for Raheena Romero for this outside money? Do you think?
I don't think so. I think that'll blow over very quickly.
And you think she's going to win this not by a lot, but by a little? Or maybe a lot. What do you think?
Well, I think she'll win by at least a little. I mean, there was some polling that was done a few months ago before this all started that showed her with a slim lead within, margin of error. Given the fact that Steve has a substantial constituency in town and she has a substantial constituency in town, that's not surprising at all. But, she's been on the ground. She's been knocking on doors. Farley's campaign hasn't done as much of that, at least from what I can observe. They've been doing a lot of mailing. I was just talking to an old political hand today, and his question is whether or not the door-to-door stuff is as effective as it used to be. We're in kind of a, because of technology and such, we're kind of in a new realm. But I think this race is Raheena's.
I always find that people distort the number of people they've actually. They go, I went through 50,000 homes. Well, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't. No. I mean,
nobody's ever walked that many homes, and you didn't. So yeah. People lie to me like that all the time.
I always just say thousands because I know it must have been thousands. Yeah. But when I say thousands, I mean I probably talked to hundreds.
No, really, people do just absolutely exaggerate that constantly in conversations I have with them.
Yeah.
Because I've walked those streets and I know how difficult it is. You're going down a block, half the people aren't home, so you didn't talk to them, and the other half don't care. It's a tough job, by the way.
Yeah,
walking door to door.
Yeah, there's all sorts of. Let's just call them mantras in politics, and you're never quite sure where they came from. Like, oh, you must contact each voter three times to have their
good
vote. So it's like phone call, mail, and door to door. Or and it's like, where'd that come from? It's always this magic number three. Right. Is this from the Trinity or something? And then there's the whole thing about if you actually talk to someone at the door, you're pretty much. There's a pretty good chance that they're going to vote for you, as opposed to mail or whatever, which are, increasingly less effective as you go on. But, it's the scholarship is kind of squishy, just like the scholarship on whether or not signs are actually effective.
By the way, the sanctuary movement issue will be on the ballot. Do you think voters will say yes to that?
I have no idea at this point. I still have reservations about the let's just say the execution of it, and I'm not sure if putting it in as a charter change is really the best way to address the issue. Although I have absolutely no problem with what they're trying to accomplish with it, I still don't know where I am on at this point. I'll probably end up voting for it just out of principle, but I don't know. I don't know where the people of Tucson are, but this campaign that they've had has surprised me so far, and they're doing an awesome job. I didn't think they'd be able to get the signatures, but they did.
I was talking to your executive director, Allison Jones, a chair of the Democratic Party, and she was upset about this outside money that Raheena was raising. She said it's a distortion of really our politics, and it's allowing outside sources to influence the votes and the makeup of our city council and mayor's office.
Well, let's just keep in mind that, again, these are, this is organized labor who are, allies of the Democratic Party, and, it's groups like Planned Parenthood and some other environmental and community groups. Again, these are groups that have actual constituencies. Farley is also benefiting from outside money. You know, there's this PAC that Bruce Ash and Luis Gonzalez have put together, which isn't so much pro-Farley as anti-Rahina. And, you know, when Bruce Ash and Luis Gonzalez are working on something.
I don't think they're both involved in that. I think it was Bruce Ash's, I think it was Paul Ash's, one of his wives, and of course he's deceased now, that gave Jesse Lugo money and gave Luis Gonzalez money. I don't think, I had Bruce Ash on the air, and he said he was absolutely shocked that his former the former stepmother had done that.
So, oh, okay. You know. All right.
So
well,
I don't think he's tied. I don't think they're tied.
Yeah, the star had brought up his name.
But Luis Gonzalez has always been somewhat of an antagonist toward Raul Grijalva. That's been a battle between both of them.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I mean, they're never been on the same page.
Yeah, and the thing
is... So there are two machines working over there, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's distressing. I mean, at this point, Luis doesn't have much of a machine. He's got some people who are loyal to him, but it's...
Well, he won a Pima Community College board race, and...
Well,
you know,
he did.
So,
but
yeah.
it's just a matter of what is he trying to accomplish? He's not even trying to...
He's trying to defeat Rahina, that's
for
sure.
He's trying to defeat Rahina, but he doesn't... It kind of reminds me of was it in Oro Valley about 20 years ago when they'd have these recall elections every once in a while, and sometimes they'd have a recall, and then the recall election would roll around, and it turned out there were no one on the ballot because they'd recalled a city councilman without having it in mind to actually recruit someone to run against.
Yeah,
and so, you know, it's kind of it's this really strange attitude toward politics where you just want to destroy something.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not trying to prop up Steve. He's just trying to destroy Rahina. And you know, again, there's not a real specific constituency involved here. It's just he managed to get his hands on some money and is putting this forward. You know, and of course the police unions and the fire unions are also supporting Steve Farley. I think because, you know, even though Rahina has generally been supportive of them, they want someone who's 100% with them rather than someone who just has them at the table and respects their views.
What about this turnout? Do you think it's going to be significant? The number of votes coming back? What do you see?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what it's been like so far. I haven't looked at the returns so far. I either think it's going to be, I mean, this is going to sound mushy. Turnout's going to be high because people are really genuinely interested in this race, or turnout's going to be low because people are
turned off.
because you know, that's the tragedy of negative campaigning is that some of the folks who engage in negative campaigning, and we saw this in 2016, are not out so much to actually convince people to vote for one candidate or another. They're just out to convince people to just not show up.
Right.
And in this case, you know, that's where it could, I don't think that's what people are trying to do here, but that could be the result, which is sad and tragic. And you know, it's just our political culture in Tucson may be changing for the worse.
Well, I'll tell you, we've never seen this before. And whether it's good or bad, or whether you say it's significant or not significant, to throw $1 million into a race of outside money toward the end of that campaign is like something we've never experienced. Well, we're uncharted waters.
Yeah, I would say it's not entirely unprecedented. When Bob Walkup ran for re-election against Tom Volge, Bob Walkup in his first term was not the well-loved mayor he became later. I think it was, in this case, it may have been Bruce Ash, I don't remember. They brought in some outside money and some Phoenix consultants to run an independent expenditure campaign to just savage Tom Volge. And a fellow I know, John Doherty, if you remember the late John Doherty from the Chamber of Commerce, he was my mayor. Mm-hmm. My neighbor at the time.
Oh, okay.
And he was, he told me that he thought that that campaign, that outside money that was running a negative campaign against Tom Volge and the Democrats had actually kept turnout down, and a race that would have been had a healthy margin for Bob Walkup. Instead, was, you know, Bob Walkup had run had won narrowly.
A margin, yeah.
Yeah, and it may have made things more difficult.
I remember
difficult.
That race, yeah.
Yeah, and it may have made things more difficult for Walkup in the future. So we have had outside money coming in the past. But again, I think that Rahina is being kind of unfairly savaged because, number one, she's not in charge of how this money gets spent. And number two, it's these are groups that have significant constituencies in Tucson.
All right.
So,
Tom Przelski, thanks for coming by. Good to talk with you. I appreciate your observations. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Member of the Executive Committee of the Pima County Democrats, Tom Przelski, former lawmaker. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Personal service, reasonable prices, and ASE certified technicians. Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works has sponsored the John C. Scott Show. I want to thank Randy Dorman for being a part of our show today. Jimmy Zuma from Washington, D.C. Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party. Shelley Fishman, our money matters guy. And Tom Przelski, former lawmaker and a member of the Executive Committee of the Democratic Party. All commentators on our show today. Back tomorrow, 3 to 5 over this backyard fence, talking the politics of Southern Arizona. This has been the John C. Scott Show from KVOI, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.